Welcome to Beyond the Breakwater, where just beyond the crashing waves of fear, discomfort, and doubt lies the greatest potential for life transformation. We want to guide you into the open waters where the calculated risk you take becomes the turning point for you or your organization to thrive. So draw up your anchors and prepare for departure in this week's episode of Beyond the Breakwater. All right, welcome back to another episode of Beyond the Breakwater. I am Lindsay, and we've got Ed here with us today, and again, Matt. So welcome back, Matt.
Thank you.
Yeah, I want to give you a chance to kind of redeem yourself because you were not entirely honest with us last week something.
Yeah, I'm not 33. I'm trying to posture and pretend that I'm actually older than I am. I'm 22.
He's Gen Z to the core.
I'm Gen Z. I'm just 19. Balding 19-year-old.
Is this like a wannabe? I want to be older, but I'm really not. Is that what the thing is?
That's it. I don't know.
And when you
I
get to 60, you want to be younger. It's just like you try to slow it down.
Look, we can really psychoanalyze this all day long, but at the end of the day, I'm just 32.
Just a 32-year-old guy.
I'm only 59 years old in about 400 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one way of looking
it's
at things.
It's your 30th birthday.
Sure.
I love when like parents are like, you're like, how old is your kid? And they're like, oh, they're 36 months old. And I'm like, so they're a 3-year-old? Like, I don't understand why
long division was in
things.
Fourth grade, so I can't.
Okay, we're going off the rails. You guys realize this?
We'll talk about boomers. They're good at math. Like, they can do longhand.
They can get back on track here.
Yeah, you know, okay, Ed. Take it away. What are we talking about this week?
All right. So I want to follow up from last week. And it is for us also last week. We recorded last week. And I thought we had this great conversation about the church, about Gen Z, about millennials. And my numbers were wrong. So sorry, my numbers are wrong too. As I was looking at boomers, you know, boomers are actually from 1946 to 1964.
What did you say last week?
I'll tell you in a second. Okay. Then after that is the millennials. You know, they come in from This is Gen X then, comes in from 65 to 1981. And then 82 to 80 to 96 is actually millennials.
Okay. I think there is some flex room on either side of those because I think it just depends on the report. Like I've seen Gen Z starts at 97, which would be me. I've seen it starts at 2002. And so, yeah, I think everybody's good with it kind of flexing a little bit, like give or take 5 years.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it really has to do more with events. Mm-hmm. And I think 9/11 was a big event that you had to be old enough to really remember 9/11. And that's what makes you a millennial, that you live through the time of saying, wow, I remember that. That was impactful. That was life-changing. That was life-altering. And then we watched everything change in the country. And then I noticed even with my own kids who didn't really remember that stuff, you know, the older ones remembered, the younger ones didn't. But the younger ones were really impacted by 2008 and the housing crash and the economy crash. And it's really changed them in terms of how they save and what they do with their money. So it's really kind of interesting having four kids and two are a little bit more millennials and two are a little bit more Gen Z. And I think it's because of those major events. Okay, so just with that said, let's kind of dive in here. I'm going to reiterate something that you guys said last week. You said that the boomer church, which is typical today, most churches are boomers in the church. The boomer church is doing nothing for society to help the hurting or those suffering from injustice. It is not changing the world. And this seemed to bother both of you. Both of you weighed in maybe just a little bit differently that the church is doing this. So my question for you is, so what would you do differently? If the church is absent today, the church is not addressing these needs, the church is not, you know, if the society is really struggling, hurting, and we have all these issues and the church is silent, you both are in the church. What would you do?
You want to swing at that?
I'll take a crack at it. I think it's when it comes to discipleship, I don't know if it's, it might be, maybe it's generational, probably. Again, it was part of the waters we swam in. Everyone's kind of like, yeah, we're Christian. We're a Christian nation, blah, blah, blah. Even that right there makes it's like a bad taste in my mouth. I'm like, no, we're not. I don't know if we ever were, you know, it's just, we was the waters we swam in. But you know, it's not like the Constitution is like the third testament. Okay. It's not, but, like when it comes to discipleship, it was so privatized. And I think what frustrates the millennial and Gen Z church is that we look at the scripture and you're just like, holy smokes, I've never seen this before. We don't talk about this before. There's a God in the scripture that cares deeply about the poor and about justice and about making wrongs right. And he's the one who cares for the orphan and the widow and mm-hmm. the fatherless and defends them, will rise up on their behalf. And then we kind of look around, we're like, okay, that's what God is. And then we look at the church, we're like, you've done none of those things. Or you've done them in a way that's ultimately, as really helpful books have come out, like When Helping Hurts, like that actually has been helpful or not helpful, even if it's been nice to kind of do a self back patting. Isn't that a nice thing that we did for the community, you know? Or you swoop in, like my friend in Knoxville, Tennessee, he is part of this nonprofit organization and he's the only pastor in that organization. And every single time, like a suburban church will swoop in and they'll do like a giveaway for the homeless, or they'll, you know, make food or blank, they distribute stuff. And they're just like, oh my goodness, I hate it when they do that. And he was like, he's kind of like fly on the wall in that moment, like, oh, really interesting. Tell me more, you know? And they're like, yeah, the church just kind of mucks things up in what mm-hmm. we're trying to do and establish here in this place. Mm-hmm. And they think they're being helpful or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you're covering a lot of ground. I'm going to back you up a little bit, because when you use the word discipleship, let's start there. Uh-huh. Because I think I've kind of learned to see that there's really two philosophies of discipleship. One philosophy is that if we teach people the scriptures enough and we mm-hmm. get them into the word and we get them into classrooms and they learn... I was actually in a meeting last week where I was listening to a boomer talk about discipleship. Mm-hmm. And as they were talking, I was waiting for the, when is it that you do? Because mm-hmm. faith without works is dead. Mm-hmm. And even for churches, faith without works is dead. So I was waiting mm-hmm. for that moment when they were going to jump from everything that we learn to now we do.
Yeah.
And it was like, we skipped it. And somehow there's this philosophy of if we just teach people enough, then they will do. I think that's one philosophy. I think another philosophy is that we're teaching to do. And I think Jesus' whole ministry, I mean, let's talk about that a little bit. What was Jesus meant? How did Jesus do it? Did he sit people in a classroom? Did he say his disciples, let's sit in the classroom first and tell you everything about this? Mm. What was his model?
I think it was, like, we've kind of talked about this before, but it was just like, come with me. And I think he still taught scripture, but mm-hmm. in a way that gave, that had a model. Like, he was kind of the originator of models and parables. And it's like, we're talking about Beyond the Breakwater. That's kind of our lens mm-hmm. and our modern twist on like some of these things. I think that's kind of the role of pastors today in some capacity, to be able to take scripture and put it in a way that is understandable for those who are in the next generation or just anybody today. And so, I mean, we've talked about that, like mustard seed, like that a lot of the parables in scripture, it made sense to them at that time. Mm-hmm. And now we have to take a look at it as like, okay, not a lot of us are farmers, not a lot of us are fishers. Mustard seed, we have to define what that is. We have to define what a yoke is, like all of these Christian words. And so I think Jesus still did that, I think, but it wasn't at like, okay, come with me and sit there and read the scroll for hours. Like mm-hmm. it was a side by side, like, let me teach you this thing and help you understand what it means for your life and for how you interact with the world.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think the church succumbed to let's do it in a classroom?
Well, you can do it on a mass market. You can do it at a wide scale, so you can kind of feel good. Okay, we've communicated these ideas and concepts. Therefore, it's the orthodoxy, it's the fallacy that orthodoxy taught leads to orthopraxy. So right teaching leads to right living. And that's, you can't make that leap, and you made that point. you can't make that leap. And I see it all the time in our churches. People can profess to know Jesus. They know a lot of information about Jesus and about who God is, but they don't translate that into their life. And I think that's been a lot of the frustration for millennials. They like with their parents, they're like, they were regular church attenders, but I never saw it in how they parented. I never saw that in how they lived. They talked a good game on Sunday morning and put on a good face. And then at home, they're screaming at us. Their marriage was in trouble. Their work-life balance was terrible. You know, all sorts of things that negatively impacted their life. And it's like in the scripture, it's like, you know, Sabbath is important. How do you parent? Don't provoke your children to wrath. Husbands, love your wives. And it's like all the things. And that's whole life discipleship. Yeah. Those are right concepts, but they touch the life. Touch not just your church life, it touches your everyday life. And that's what it is to be a disciple of Jesus.
So let's apply our model, because this is Beyond the Breakwater. We've noticed, we just hosted a group of church leaders and pastors, this week, and we talked them through kind of the whole model of Beyond the Breakwater. My concern always is that we're doing the same thing, because when we bring people into classroom and we're showing them, even though we're showing them pictures and everything, it's very different. You both went in the boat with me. Mm-hmm. We went in the boat and we went through the channel and we went to the breakwater and we went beyond the breakwater. And there's a vast difference between experiencing that and just talking about it. Mm-hmm. So making the leap. So when we talk about beyond the breakwater with you guys, it's just like, got it, because you've been there. Mm-hmm. Others are not there. So discipleship's hard because it always has to start in a classroom. And I think today, doesn't the church wrestle with this?
Yeah. I mean, immediately I'm thinking in the model, it's like there, before I had gone out on the boat with you, it's like I've been on a boat before in a small inland lake. And so I think the knowledge of what I knew that model to be, it was kept. And so there are certain things that are like sensory that I was not anticipating feeling, for example, getting motion sick and the unrest that you have when like you're out there and you're like, man, these waves are 4 foot high. There's 12 mile per hour winds. You want me to steer the boat? And I'm just like trying to find the horizon. I'm thinking, can we just go back in for like 10 minutes and let me stand on like solid, not moving ground for a few minutes? And okay, I'm going to try jumping in the water now because that might help. And okay, now I'm going to water ski. And so there are all of these like sensory things that you can't experience when you're talking about and showing it in pictures. And so I think that can also be said for discipleship. Like I think we talked about this last week. Like we can talk about what it looks like to like cast your anxieties on him. We could talk about what my yoke is easy and burden is light, but what does that actually mean? And I don't think it is one more Bible class that is going to resolve some of the issues that people are experiencing. Like, what does it look like to forgive? And so there are all of these principles that we're teaching in the classroom, but what it is neglecting are some of those sensory things that you are experiencing when you are then and there and like trying to understand, what do I do with that?
Mm-hmm. So just to clarify, when we were out in the boat, I remember I jumped in the water and I remember you fell in the
We've
water.
We've talked about this before. One gust of wind and I fall over.
It.
A gust of wind.
That was the funniest thing I ever saw. I jumped, you fell.
I'm an athlete.
But you have to experience those things. Okay, so applying this today, Matt, how has this changed you? You are really a discipleship pastor. That is your heartbeat. That is the core of who you are. Mm-hmm. How has this changed you as a millennial? Underneath, if you will, the model of what we're doing, how has it impacted you?
It goes back to when I was actually going to be a freshman. And I went on my first mission trip, and it was to Hammond, Indiana. And short-term, 1 week long, so the same thing, Call to the Creek, that's going to be happening here in Midland. That was the same organization that I went with, which are teenagers just from all over the world, or all over the country. And it was there after a few days of having worked on a man's house named Gordon that I had this connecting the dots moment, because I'd already had this genuine interest in scripture, and just kind of a quirky kid in that way. Like, who's what eighth grader do you know is this cracking the scriptures open and like, I love this, you know? But I was doing that, and then I was, but I'm like, okay, what is, I know the right things about God, and then I'm serving this man that I've never met before and doing things that I've never done before and making that connection that this is what my faith is about. My faith is about knowing Jesus and making him known in this way, loving my neighbor, loving God, loving people. And it's like, that's a nice thing to say, but then you actually do it and you embody it. And it just hits in a whole new way. Just like you're saying, it's like you can say the right things, even connecting it to something more kind of everyone's world, parenting. I can know the right information about what it should be, what a parent should be, what a father should be, but then I become a father. And this is a level of moving it from the head to the heart and into the hands and the mouth as you parent your kids. And it's different. But it just means a lot to, as I've thought about what, you know, what happens in, as a carry on in my career, like what will I do? And I thought oftentimes the very first thing I'll do is do the, like, we'll start a bridge. We'll start a grocery store, because it's something that, as you have said to me in conversations we've had, when people have said, wow, who's behind this? Like, why is this happening? And they're like, well, this is a church that started this. You're like, oh, that sounds like what the church should be doing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah.
And
it just makes sense to me. And I think it makes sense to the community. Mm-hmm. And so if it makes sense to me and it makes sense to the community and it's a mm-hmm. witness of the gospel, why in the world aren't we doing this? Why isn't this at scale?
Yeah.
So how does a church balance classroom and practical? Now we're in a different situation because mm-hmm. we have these ministries mm-hmm. that it's really easy to say, hey, put your faith into practice and go serve, which we know that's hard. A lot of times people don't really want to do that. They'd rather sit in a classroom because it's so much easier to sit and learn than it is to actually do. Mm-hmm. I mean, you talked about being a parent. It's so much easier to tell parents how to parent, mm-hmm. and then you become one, and you realize you don't know what you're talking about because right. it's really hard because now you have to do. So what's the balance in the church today? I know the boomers is really, they didn't do a lot. Now, the generation before me, back in the 50s, that's where so many courageous ministries started. Churches were started. That's where camps all started. I've never heard of a church starting a camp, like a retreat camp, mm-hmm. ever since the 50s. You know, that's all outdated now. I mean, we went to one of those camp facilities, you know, last year, and it's kind of run down, you know, but in its heyday, it was really huge. So that was the generation before me. So it almost seems like the church has become less courageous, more discipled in a classroom. The boomers are comfortable with that. But you told me last week you're really not comfortable with that because the church is sitting on the sidelines. So how does the church balance classroom discipleship and actual, like, living it out?
Under the current model of today, you mean, like, with churches, if they don't have community ministries, like, how do they do that?
Then how do they do that?
Yeah. I mean, immediately I'm thinking, like, we led a study. It was, like, called a blessed study, and I loved mm-hmm. it because I feel like it's a really practical, it's like, kind of like, okay, you're testing the waters a little bit. And if you haven't heard of a church doing something that is actually like serving those in their community, I feel like it's a really good place to plant your foot in a Bible class with where you're familiar, and then your foot in like, okay, let me see what this is like to know some of the people around me. And so I think if your church is not doing something corporately to serve your community, you have to look at like the individual and where God has placed them. I think immediately, like, we have the assumption that we have the responsibility to give to people going overseas, or mm-hmm. we can just like give to local nonprofits and like check done off the list. But I think as I've done this study, kind of it's preparing people to be everyday missionaries where God has placed you. So wherever you live, work, study, play, you take a look at like who is in your neighborhood. Like, do you actually know your neighbors? Do you know who your coworkers are? And I've led it a few times, and every time it's been like really eye-opening to the people that are going through it to think like, wow, that is like a huge relief. Like, I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I don't have to do anything that is like, I don't have to give up a month of my time to go overseas and learn a new language. Like, just at the grocery store, I saw someone that was hurting and they needed help and they needed help paying for some of their bill. And I was able to do that. And I didn't know my neighbor. And so we hosted him over for dinner. And he's a single senior older man who is feeling lonely. And I think what it did is it just opened the eyes of like, oh my gosh, like there are people outside of myself, outside of my church that need help. And it puts perspective in like this group. One of the most recent group I had, it was like high schoolers. There was like every single generation represented in this, all the way from high schoolers to like 70 years old. And to just kind of partner together and be like, wow, like we can join in this and kind of pray through some of the stuff that we are going through as a church and people in the church, but then we can be propelled into the community as an individual. So I don't know if that's the answer you're looking for. I'm just thinking practically giving churches a place to really start if they're not like ready to jump into starting a grocery store. Yeah. But there are small things like
that. Okay, we'll come back to this. So Matt, weigh in. How does the church balance classroom discipleship and actual discipleship, especially if there's the church is not involved in anything in the community?
Yeah, I mean, it can be very much what Lindsay said, and one of the letters is begin with prayer. So you say you asking questions of God, Jesus, where are you at work? And then the follow up, how can I join you? Mm-hmm. So you're and then the next letter is listen. So you're listening to both Jesus and you're listening to your community. What are the needs? What are the things that Jesus is highlighting to me as I pray on this? And I think that you can do that corporate, kind of like, what are the needs here? Oh my goodness, food is a huge need in our community. How do we address that? But you don't have to do it at large scale. You can do it at small scale. And one of my favorite books that I've read, shifted my thinking, was The Art of Neighboring, and a book where it just kind of posed the question, what if when Jesus said, love your neighbor, he just meant the people that are literally your neighbors? Mm. I was like, huh, you know, neighbor always felt like such a huge target. And I was like, how do I begin? It's like it became, when you aim at everything, you're aiming at nothing. And so it felt kind of insurmountable or unattainable. And then it's like, oh, I can meet 8 people. I can meet those individuals. I can figure that. I can wrap my head around that. But I think it's, you know, to answer your question, balancing classroom and then like living it out. I mean, it is like the bless kind of environment. It's okay. So here's the thing here's a concept. Here's a framework of life on life discipleship. Here's how, you know, being attentive to your neighbors. So therefore, after we finish this session today, we're going to go out and we're going to pray and do a neighborhood walk. We're going to pray as we walk together. We're going to do it all together. You can address the concept in a classroom or in a group setting, and then you can say, now let's go do it. And that's exactly what Jesus did. He's like, here's the idea. Here's how we are going to, here's what God feels and thinks about this situation. Let's go and do that, because he would go then turn around and heal the people, feed the people, minister to the people. And it's something, or model prayer, you know, how do I pray? Well, I see you do it. I think that's the balance you strike. Right. Let's talk about it. Okay. Now we've talked about it. We've kind of apprehended. Let's go and give it a try.
Are you finding that the boomers are resistant to that?
Some are accepting and ready and excited by it. I don't know, Matt, what are you thinking?
I think, yeah, it depends. I think I think at that point it becomes a bit more individual, because culture is the water we swim in. And when you're in kind of entrenched in a church, and every church has a culture, I think the question is, what is that church's culture? It's going to be harder to kind of break in with anything of that nature. Like a blessed study doesn't work just at any church, because you might even be able to start it. No one would be like, I'm not interested in that, because they're so, you know, blinders are up. But depending on the individual, I mean, even in any church, I think there are just people who have like a natural desire, like, I want to know more what it looks like to follow Jesus. And you kind of invite them into something and they're like, whoa, this is exactly what I've been hungering for. My church never does any of these kind of things. Thank you so much, you know? So I think it's individual at that point.
I also want to jump back in with, I was talking with someone last night, and he was a 25-year-old, and he was from the up north, and we were just talking about like the model of the church, and he came from like an LCMS Lutheran church, small town, and he was just like, yeah, it's like the church is dying, like the pastor mm-hmm. there, he's 2 years away from retiring, and the church will die out, like every single person in there is old. They've maintained a congregation of 50 people for the last 20 years. And I was like, actually, I'm kind of shocked that they've maintained it. Mm-hmm. And he's just, yeah, like there's enough people like having kids to like just kind of keep that number pretty steady. Mm. But he was frustrated because he's like, it's just incredibly traditional, leaves no room for any type of like real faith to happen. Like the church is incredibly academic. And so he said he noticed something in like, I mean, not to bash the Lutheran faith. These are like his words, but he's like, the church was just really academic, which is fun and mm-hmm. exciting at a time, but that comes to a cap. Like there, you hit a wall where it's like, okay, now what do I do with it? And he said that something his dad and his grandpa always said was the pastor should have a normal job in the community. Like they should be working in the church as a pastor, but also employed in like a part-time or full-time job working somewhere, because they're like, that's where lost souls are. That's where the people are at. And you have a lost sense of touch on what is happening in the world when you're so ingrained on like the academia of your congregation and living, breathing everything within that 50 people congregation at any given point. Like that's your whole life. And so I just thought, I'm like, wow. Like that, I just let him talk for a while. And I was like, wow, this is just really interesting, because it's mm-hmm. kind of a lot of what we're talking mm-hmm. about mm-hmm. and stuff that he saw, stuff that he was discontent with and wanted to change.
So something that I've noticed in the church, a lot of people talk about the issues, but mm-hmm. nobody is willing to do anything about it. I mean, we host a lot of churches, a lot of pastors, and oftentimes there's no fruit. Nothing comes of it because they're not willing to take that step. We tend to... well, then let's do something about it. And you're part of a church that says, let's do something about it. But if you're in a church that doesn't want to do anything about it, mm-hmm. then what do you do?
Hmm. Yeah, I think at that point, anything like this, whether it's small or large, I mean, taking ownership of, I'm going to lead a blessed study, and we're going to kind of figure this out, like kind of this neighboring thing. What does that look like in our own context? That takes a leader.
Yeah.
It of a small scale thing, starting the bridge, takes a leader. You can't just kind of hope that, because at that point you're just like, gosh, I really hope someone will lead us. Mm-hmm. I really hope someone kind of takes this on, because it's the fear, the responsibility, the burden, the what God might be calling me to. And I think not everyone is right for that, but there are people that God calls on. And I mean, and that in a lot of ways, that's a failure of the shepherd, if it's a pastor in a church, because that is their call. And I remember one reframe that was really critical for me when I was planting in Hoboken, because I didn't have a congregation, but I'm trying to get one. And then I started looking at the city as, this is my congregation. Most of them have ever been to church at the service, but I'm going to make sure I can call on every delinquent member that I can. Because that was kind of like, these are my sheep. That's what Jesus says. Like, I have sheep that are of this fold, but there are still other sheep that are not yet of my fold, and I want to bring them too.
Yeah.
And so, like, there are sheep out there. Mm-hmm. I don't know their names yet, mm-hmm. but he wants to find them and bring them with me as the under shepherd, right?
So, what do you think your generations are waiting for? I mean, if you're in a church, I mean, this is where we can talk about the issue, mm-hmm. but I would imagine some people maybe listen to this who are in a church that nothing's happening mm-hmm. Because in most churches, community ministry is not happening. That's why we're doing the podcast, to encourage mm-hmm. them to do it. Mm-hmm. So what would you say to somebody who's a Gen Z, mm-hmm. a millennial, in a church, nothing's happening? I would imagine, based on last week's conversation, a lot of frustration because mm-hmm. the church is really failing to address the hurting, the suffering, the injustice, the needs in the community. Mm-hmm. So what would you say to somebody who's your age in a church that's doing nothing?
I think think they're well, you asked first, what are they waiting for? I think they're waiting for permission. Or,
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah, like to be asked, because I think every single person that I have talked to that is in this generation where they're wrestling with the discontentment and they're like, can anybody do this? And then you're like, well, would you? And they're like, oh, I can just do that. Or like, I'm thinking even like the high schoolers, like I'm leading a high school small group, and it's been amazing where it's like we meet from 6 and then we have a meal together. We do the thing. And then at 7:30, it's done. And they all just want to hang out and go in the gym and play spike ball and like games and basketball. And like even at that, it's like, OK, the building locks at 8. And our rule is kind of like, okay, if the building is locked, it's closing down, like you kind of got to get out unless there is a staff person overseeing it. And I do not want to like squash connection and people hanging out. So it's like at that point, it's like I stay so that they can have time to connect and play and just be kids and have fun and have a safe space to do that. But if I was not there, it's like, do we have permission to be here? Like, I think the only reason they ventured into the gym was because I said, yeah, you can do that. And otherwise they would just be like, all right, we're sticking to our room. They go into that other area and they're like, we had no idea this was over here. We didn't know that we could use this. Could we just come in here like on any given day? And I don't think that is specific to our church. I think even just talking with friends from over on the west side of Grand Rapids, it's like they're saying the same thing, especially as I'm kind of talking with them about like, this is what my life looks like right now. And it's really cool. And this is all the stuff I've been learning. And it's been interesting to hear how that has also just impacted them. With one of my friends, she's like, I love what you guys are doing for the community. And so I want to start some type of like community event at the church. Like, she's like, I can't by just me as a member of the church, like start a grocery store, but I can probably host an event at the church. But it's like, she's got to jump through all these hoops to just host something there.
Yeah.
And I just encouraged her, like, if you can't do it in the church, get a few people from the church who you trust to like be hospitable to people who are not in the church and go do it at a local coffee shop. Go do it somewhere outside the church if the church is so behind on saying like, yeah, we want you here.
Let's carry that conversation into the next podcast, because you're really talking about like your parents' church and what does that look like. But I want to go back to something that you said, Lindsay, and then we're going to wrap up the session because we're getting out of time here. You said two things. You said the church should ask you to do this, and I think you said that you needed permission to do so. Those are two different things. So like, if you see the need, are you approaching the church, or are you waiting for the church to approach you?
Let me just clarify,
because, and here's why.
Okay.
Because you're seeing the need. Obviously, the people that are in the church either no longer see the need, because it's been like that for so long that they don't see it anymore, or maybe they see it and they don't know what to do. So if you are seeing the need, are you waiting for them to say, oh, hey, you're a Gen Z, do you see the need? Why don't you do something about it? That's waiting for them to ask you. Or are you looking at the need going, hello, don't you see the injustice in our community? Don't you see the people hurting?
Yeah.
Why aren't we doing something about it? And I want to be part of that. I think those are two different ways of doing the same thing. And you covered both almost in one sentence.
I think it is both. I don't think it's one or the other, because I think there are some Gen Z who are seeing the injustices and they're frustrated and they're saying, can I do this thing? And the church is saying no, or they're like, all right, but let's run it through the whole chain, which is going to take approximately 3 months. And we forgot about it, by the way. And so now it's just off the radar. And now the person's lost the momentum and the passion for it. And so then at that point, they're kind of, I think, just throwing their hands in the air, and they're either not doing something about it, or they're going to a nonprofit or to like somewhere else that is not the church. Like we talked about last week, like people are not really giving to the church anymore, but they're spending their time in a lot of like social justice ministries. I've had a lot of friends completely just leave the church, and they're just finding all of their purpose in social justice ministries. And they've just kind of given a middle finger to the church because they're not doing a thing about it. And it's like hurtful to them on the behalf of those who they care about. And then on the flip side of that coin, though, I think sometimes we sit in the like not realizing that we can have the permission to do something until someone asks of like, hey, have you thought about this before? And then it's like, oh, no, I haven't. But now I am.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I think it's both.
OK, let's wrap it up. Matt, maybe kind of a final question. You're 32. You're not 33.
I'm not.
That's what you said. You're 32.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if you're 32, you're not in ministry, you're in a church, you're sitting in the pew, and you want to do something, and you see some of these needs. What would you recommend somebody sitting in that pew today going, how come the church isn't doing something about this?
Mm-hmm.
What would you recommend to them?
Yeah, I think you can say, I'm so frustrated with this, and they're not doing anything about it. I had this very similar moment. I was like, there's a regular meeting that happens with me and some other pastors in our circuit. And I was like, man, this meeting is just a fruitless waste of time. I don't like going to these things. And then I had this moment of like, well, I could complain or I could offer myself and say, hey, I have an interest in this. Yeah. What do you think? And I think that would be where I would go rather than complain, because what fruit does that bear? Say, hey, Pastor so-and-so, I really have a hunger and a thirst for this. Could we have some coffee sometime? And I just would love to share what I'm really interested in doing. And my hope would be that they would say, yeah, I'd love to have coffee with you. I hope it wouldn't be like, your call is very important to us. You're 17th in line, you know? That they would say, yeah, absolutely, I'd love to meet with you. If they don't, who cares? You don't need a pastor's permission or your mm-hmm. church's permission to do anything that's mm-hmm. worth doing. You can go out, similar to my church planning experience, is like there was a Hoboken Housing Authority. There was a need. They said, we just need some people to take ownership of doing community events at mm-hmm. this place and kind of creating some community among the residents. Can you do that? I'm like, we don't have a church. We haven't started services yet, but can you do that? Like, and I prayed on it, and God was like, why wouldn't you do that? I was like, yeah, I will do this. This is something I can say yes to. This is a monthly thing. So it didn't have to be big. It was just a monthly cookout with music, blah, blah, blah. It was totally doable. And I think there is so many things that are totally doable mm-hmm. that doesn't need the organization's permission or blessing.
Yeah.
So if I heard you, if you're sitting in a pew, because they're mm-hmm. not in Hoboken, they're not in that position to do mm-hmm. what you were asked to do, or they're sitting in a pew, a great first step would be call your pastor
mm-hmm.
and say, let's have a cup of coffee and let's talk.
Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Beyond the Breakwater, a podcast of Elevate Community Ministries. Don't let the conversation stop here. You can email us at hello@beyondthebreakwater.org. We would love to chat with you, answer questions, plan a visit, and help you take your next step. We'll see you next week.